Hey, I'm Jamie from Stonemaier Games, and today I'm going to talk about a topic that might seem like it's negative, but I'm really not putting a negative slant on this. This is my favorite games, my top 10 favorite games that I've only played once and that I probably only will play once, and that these are games that I'm really happy to have played. I just don't see myself getting them back to the table again. And so the focus of this video really is not on why I'm not going to put them back to the table, although I might talk a little bit about that, but why more so I'm happy that I had the experience once and that I did them once. And just to be clear, this is not a list of games that are designed to be played only once. So like a legacy game is typically a game that involves permanent changes to the game. It's designed to be played once. You have this experience, you're done. An escape room game is a game that's designed to be played once. I'm not talking about those types of games on this list. You'll kind of see the different reasons in a minute when I get to the various games that I'll discuss. So let's start off with the Ambassador picks here. Ambassadors did pick a few Stonemaier games, but there were no repeats actually among them. I think there was an Ambassador that mentioned Red Rising. I think there was a Tapestry. There was maybe a Scythe in there. So different Ambassadors. I just wanted to mention this because Stonemaier Ambassadors are people who volunteer for Stonemaier Games. They help out the company in a variety of ways. They probably are a little biased towards Stonemaier Games, but it was good to see that they included some of our games on their list too, so that they're not completely biased. But Ambassador picks that were selected by multiple Ambassadors were Ark Nova, Barrage, Betrayal at House on the Hill, Blood on the Clock Tower, Endless Winter, Gloomhaven, Lacrimosa, Lost Ruins of Arnak, Munchkin, Nemesis, On Mars, Root, Takenoko, and Twilight Imperium. And the reason I think this is actually particularly interesting, that these were completely different people answering this survey, this poll. They didn't know what other survey respondents had made, and yet there were multiple people that picked these specific games. And so that's something I might dig into a little bit today, why some games maybe aren't designed to be played once, for sure. Like, these are games that I think designers put a lot of effort into replayability, and yet they only ended up being played once. And the people who are happy to have only played them once. And two I want to highlight in particular out of those, because nearly 10, I think it was maybe 10 to a dozen different Ambassadors mentioned these two games specifically. Root and Twilight Imperium had by far the most picks. There were a lot of people who had played Root once and were happy to only have played it once. So they were happy they got that experience from Root, but didn't want to play it again. And Twilight Imperium, which is the longest game on this list, and it will show up on my list as well, is the game that was the most picked game. Root was number two, and Twilight Imperium was number one by Ambassadors. My honorable mentions for this list of games that I've played once, I'm glad I played them. I most likely will not play them again. I won't necessarily even seek to play them again. But I'm happy to play them. I play them once. Honorable mentions. So I'll just do these quickly: Fireball Island, Fury of Dracula, Food Chain Magnate, Shazen, Barrage, Marvel Champions, Journeys in Middle Earth, Tainted Grail. And I know those last two are campaign games, but I still got a lot of fun out of the one session that I had. I just wasn't intrigued to continue to play the campaign. This War of Mine, Two Rooms and a Boom, The Alchemist, Eldritch Horror, Star Wars X-Wing, Twilight Struggle, Android Netrunner, Flesh and Blood, Archipelago, and On Mars. And again, before I get to my top 10 list, I do want to emphasize that these are highly subjective. Like, these will be different for anybody. I probably named someone's favorite game on this list that they've played 100 times. That's awesome. I'm not discounting that at all. These are just the games that I played once. I'm happy I played them once. I don't plan to play them again. And before I forget, I did want to mention that one of the reasons I thought of this video is that a publisher contacted me a little while ago. We were having a little chat about a fairly famous game designer that they had published a game from, and they think that maybe based a little bit on that designer's name, that they had a game that sold very well. But they labeled this game, and I'm not going to name the game, but they labeled the game as a played-it-once game or a play-it-once game. So they think it's a game that they are really proud of. They think the designer did a great job on it. But their sense is that a lot of people bought the game and played it once, and I think many people were happy to have played it once, but they don't see it getting back to the table. And I'm going to talk about this in a video upcoming soon about replayability, talk a little bit more about replayability in games. But I think one of the things I'm going to mention in that video is that there are definitely games out there that people will only play once, and I think there are a lot of games. I think, in fact, most games that get to people's tables are games that will only be played once. I think it's almost rare that a game is played a bunch of times compared to a game that's only played once. And it's a really important reminder to me as a designer to make that first experience as good as possible. And in a way of encouraging people to get it to the table and hopefully have fun discovering it more and more times after just that first play. But that first experience is so, so important because it might be, in fact, it almost will likely be their only experience with the game. So let's get to my top 10 list. Number 10, Twilight Imperium. This is a game that I'm happy to have played, largely because people had talked about it for so long. I was so intrigued by this highly acclaimed game that people have talked about being like the most epic experience they've ever had at their table. I was so intrigued by it. I really wanted to play it. And so I finally arranged to play it a few years ago. We sat down for, I believe it was either a 5 or 6 player game. And it took around 5 hours. It's a long game, much longer than the games I usually play. And that's a theme that I'll see on a few of these games. They are simply longer than the types of games that I am willing to set aside time for. They require almost a half a day commitment to be able to play. And Twilight Imperium was one of those games. It was epic. It was sprawling. It was asymmetric. There were so many different things going on. And for such a complex game, we were able to get into playing it pretty quickly. Like the rules explanation did not hold us back all that much. Although I think we did watch some videos in advance to make sure we were ready. But I'm really happy that I had that big epic experience of Twilight Imperium. It was formative to see this game, to play this game that so many people had talked about on Board Game Geek and elsewhere in the hobby. Some raved about, some had just talked about like one epic experience of it. In our particular game, and part of this is that I just don't have a great memory, I don't remember anything specific about this session. I have a video about it out there somewhere about my favorite mechanism. I think it was probably related to the asymmetric tech trees that each faction has. I don't remember any particular moment, but I think people who do play this game a bunch of times have very memorable moments from specific sessions for this game. For me, it's a really long game. And that's maybe the main reason that I'm not, I isn't one that I'll seek out in the future, but I am really glad that I played it. And Twilight Imperium. This is the 4th edition that we played. And number 9 is Cosmic Frog. I could have a visual of this because I had this game over here on the shelf. This is a game that I played it once. I'm really happy I played it once because it was a very, very memorable experience. Partially is that it was fairly recent that I played Cosmic Frog. But it's just such a zany game. Like you play in Cosmic Frog as a 2-mile high frog, interdimensional frog that is eating terrain out of the galaxy, and you're digesting it, and you're sometimes fighting the other frogs that are trying to do the same thing. So, really wacky, intriguing theme to it, intriguing world building and backstory to it. And I could tell that a lot of thought and care went into that theme and how it relates to the mechanisms in the game. It isn't the style of game that I play, because it is potentially a high take that or high combat game. We didn't do very much of that in our game. In fact, I experimented with it because I like to try out all the different mechanisms when I play a game. I at one point attacked another player and just to see what it was like. And I kind of felt so bad about it that I tried to hurt them as little as possible when I won the attack, that sort of thing. But just for the sake of the sheer wackiness of it, and the beautiful art, has really, really beautiful art, I'm definitely glad that I got it to the table that one time. And I think this is something that I'll see in a few of these other games, that it just created a distinct, memorable experience. And I got the experience for that game. It's like watching a great movie once. I don't need to watch every movie multiple times, even though I might really, really love that movie. Cosmic Frog was a zany, wacky movie that I really enjoyed, and I just don't feel the need to play it again and again. So that's Cosmic Frog at number 9. And number 8 is Eclipse. Not the current edition of Eclipse, but the previous edition. And this one I'm glad I played for a very specific reason, which is that it opened up my eyes, maybe for the first time. I can't remember if I probably played Terra Mystica before this, but the way that income works in the game as it relates to the map and what you can do on each turn is really cool. It's a really cool player mat system that shows you like how much you can do on each turn based on how you've distributed your units, your resources out on the tiles, out in the galaxy. I can't say that it was actually a good experience with Eclipse. Like, it was one of these games, it was like a 5-hour game. I think there were 5 or 6 of us, it was a lot of us, and one player kind of got pinned on the edge of the map, and I felt really bad for this player the whole time. I had stayed away from them, I didn't want to pin them, and no one was really aggressively going after this player, but people had, once that player got a little weak, that player was an easy target to combat a little bit. And so even people try not to hurt this player all that much, they would combat a little bit just to gain a little bit more progression. And that player really spent the last 2 hours not doing anything. So it wasn't a great experience overall with the game, but it was one of these experiences where I am so glad that I played it, because it is a really, really well-designed game. There's a lot of interesting mechanisms in Eclipse and a lot of impactful mechanisms that have impacted other games, including my own designs. So it's one of these things, like with other games on this list, where I've learned something from this game. I'm really glad I spent time with this game, but I definitely don't see myself getting Eclipse back to the table again. And number seven is Game of Thrones. The full name of this game is very long. It's a Game of Thrones, a board game about a Game of Thrones, something like that. But the main Game of Thrones game, the big one that has the map on the table, and each player is different, playing different factions, and you're betraying other players, and you can ally with other players temporarily or as long as you want. You can backstab them. And it was definitely, at the time I was exploring these epic game experiences. What makes a game feel epic? And this was definitely one of those games to explore for that purpose. It was a long game. There were a lot of players. There was a lot of table talk and discussion, a lot of epic things happening where people did join together their forces for a little bit and then inevitably backstabbed each other, as you do in Game of Thrones. The game is designed really well around those concepts. I think it was in the height of Game of Thrones on HBO as well, so it was really exciting to play this game while the show was you know, must-watch TV every week. So that was certainly part of it. And I definitely am glad for playing the game for having learned from it as well, because one of the combat mechanisms, I can't remember if it influenced Scythe, maybe I played it after I designed Scythe, I can't remember, but the combat mechanism of choosing a card from your hand and having that be the how you impact combat for that turn is something that I really like to see in games. I really like that in Kemet, I like that in Scythe, I like it in Rex as well. But yeah, Game of Thrones, it was a huge epic experience. I'm really glad that we played it. I'm really glad to be able to say that I played it, because I can share the story of the game with other people, and I can relate to other people when they say that they've played this game, similar to Twilight Imperium. I now know what they're talking about now that they play the game. I play a lot of games for that reason, so just so I can better understand what people are talking about when they talk about these games that they love. But I don't see myself playing it again. Next up is number six is Cthulhu Death May Die. This is a really cool game. Really, really cool game where players are kind of going insane throughout the game. But as your insanity increases, you actually get more powerful. You're moving towards losing the game as you get more and more insane, because that's one way to lose the game. But I really like this feeling of powering up as the game progresses by kind of pushing those limits of insanity in the game. It's not exactly a dungeon crawl game, but it has very much the feel of a dungeon crawl game, where you are controlling characters that are running around a space, a dungeon, a room, a house, a place, and you're fighting monsters that are coming at you and trying to kill you. That's pretty much a dungeon crawl game. And that just isn't the style of game that I get excited to play over and over again. As cool as the minis look, as much time as the designer spent putting different scenarios that you can combo together with different bosses in the game, which I think is really cool, it's a game that I'm really happy that I played once for that experience to see all these cool mechanisms, but I wasn't excited to play again afterwards, simply because dungeon crawl games don't necessarily get me really excited. So that's another reason for some of these games on this list, and some play-at-once games that I may not connect with that style of game, but I still want to play these games that have unique mechanisms. And so this is certainly one of them. Cthulhu Death May Die, number six. Number five is a game that was originally pitched to Stonemaier Games. The designer David pitched Anachrony to Stonemaier Games well before it was published. And I really liked the core mechanism, but I thought a lot of other elements of the game needed a lot of work beyond what I was willing to commit to it at the time. And I am so happy that another publisher ran with it and did a Mind Clash Games, ran with Anachrony and did a great job with it. But Anachrony has some brilliant mechanisms in it. It's this time travel game where you can send resources. You can basically accept resources from your future self. So if you just need some resources, you can say, oh, I have them now. I'm going to send them to myself in the future. And then in the game, in the timeline of the game, when you get to that future point, you need to have gathered those resources to be able to send them back, or you have a paradox. I think that's really cool. I also think the worker placement in the game is really cool, where they have these mechs that you can insert your worker into to go venture out into the more dangerous areas of the board. I think that's a really cool thing. In any game where you're putting something into a mech or a mech suit or a power armor and then marching out into the world, that's really, really cool. I would say for Anachrony, the reason that I probably won't play it again is partially the length and partially the complexity. It's a fairly complex game, and it was maybe just a little bit too much mental overhead for my gaming preferences. I prefer kind of the middleweight Euro level of rules overhead and little things that you have to remember and fiddle with and move around. But I could definitely see how people who love heavy games love Anachrony. And I definitely still appreciate having played it and having experienced those mechanisms firsthand, especially after having the game originally pitched to us a few years before that, to see what the designer and the publisher had done with it to bring it to life. I think they did a fantastic job with it. That's Anachrony at number 5. At number 4, we have Maracaibo. Maracaibo is a game that's designed to be played either standalone sessions, one after another, or it has kind of a campaign, kind of a persistent element to it. Whenever you discover a new card in the game or add a new card, it's permanently, you're adding a new card that wasn't in the game to the deck of cards, and then it's just in there for all future sessions. I thought that was really, really cool. In Maracaibo, it's also a rondel game. So you're moving around a one-way action selection track based on your movement ability at the time, and every round of the game is just how long you take to finish this cycle across sea and sometimes land and get back to the main port. Really cool mechanisms from one of my favorite designers, Alexander Pfister. And again, similar to Anachrony, it's just maybe a little bit too heavy of a game for me to pursue getting back to the table again. I think part of this, honestly, is some of these heavier, more complex games, if I've played them and I go a long period of time without playing them again, I feel like, and I really do, have to just completely relearn the game. And so I have to make a choice. Do I want to relearn this game that I enjoyed, but I've already learned from it, I've already played it, I already have experienced it, or would I rather learn a new game and learn from that game and perhaps have that be a game that I really want to get back to the table quite soon in the future. So that's something that I go through, I think, every time I play one of these heavier, longer, more complex games. Am I willing to put in the time to completely relearn that game to play it again versus playing another game? And Maracaibo felt like one of those games. I really like what Alexander Pfister did with it. But because I didn't pursue it in the near future, now I feel like I have to relearn it if I play it again. And there's some other games that I think I'd rather try for the first time. So that's Maracaibo at number 4. And number 3 is a game that kind of surprised me that I put it on this list, but I think it might be true that I played Wonderlands War and had a wonderful experience playing Wonderlands War at Geekwood of the West last year, little convention here in St. Louis, and I was there with one of the developers of the game. Or I wasn't there with the developer of the game taught the game to the table. He was there to teach and play. And so we had like the best possible experience you could have with this game. I was playing with a few strangers at Geekway, people that I didn't know, but I was also playing with the developer, not the designer, but the developer. And he had the nicest version of the game possible out on the table. So we were playing this nice, beautiful version of the game with someone who was really good at teaching the game. It was just a wonderful experience. And I had a great time with it. And then kind of similar to Maracaibo, I didn't own it, so I didn't get back to the table. And a friend eventually got it. It is possible I will play my friend's copy at some point, but I do feel like I will have to completely relearn the game. And it is, it's a game that scratches a very similar itch to one of my favorite games, The Quacks of Quedlinburg, that I do know really well, that I can get to the table very easily. In fact, just saying it right now makes me want to play it tonight, if I can get a friend to bring it tonight, to game night. And so if I'm gonna play a game, a bag building game where I'm pulling stuff out of a bag and pushing my luck, I'm probably gonna go with Quacks over the more complex Wonderlands War. As much fun as I had with the game, and as much as I admire and really appreciate that game, so I guess that's one reason that some of these games may not get played again. That there's another game that I love just as much that is somewhat similar that I'm probably gonna, that's a little bit easier for me to get to the table, that I'm more likely to get to the table. So that's Wonderlands War at number 3. Number 2 very much falls into that category too. This is Blitzkrieg from, again, one of my favorite designers, Paolo Mori. He designed Libertalia, Libertalia Winds of Galecrest, and a number of other games that I really love. Blitzkrieg is a brilliant game. It's a brilliant tug-of-war game with a number of different tug-of-war like mini-games that you're engaging with your opponent. It also has bag building. It's also a bag building game. So it has all these different mechanisms that I love. I love tug-of-war. I love bag building. But there are other games that do scratch that same itch that are just easier for me to get to the table. It's easier for me to get Hanami Koji to the table. It's easier for me to get Air, Land, and Sea to the table. They're different games, for sure, but they do have this tug-of-war feel to them. They don't have bag building, but they do have... They feel very similar, and they're less complex. They're a little less complex, and I think sometimes a simpler, more streamlined game is just easier for me to remember and easier for me to get back to the table. So Blitzkrieg really is not that complex, but you do have to remember all these different, what different units do and when you might want to play them. But it is a really brilliant game. So it's like one of the best games on this list that I think is amazing, that I really enjoyed, but I'm probably going to play one of these other games in the future if I was in the mood for a two-player tug-of-war game. So that's Blitzkrieg at number two. And finally, at number one, this is a game, A War of Whispers, that I had a blast with. Like, it really genuinely surprised me by how good it was, because I'd heard good things, but I had never played it, and I wasn't really sure if it was my style of game, but I really, really enjoyed it. In A War of Whispers, you are playing as people that are influencing different factions on a shared map. But you are not those factions. You are just influencing them, and you are kind of betting on certain factions doing better than others. And then you're influencing those factions, or you're switching up your allegiances in secret and changing the factions that you're supporting and the factions that you want to score well at the end of the game. It is a really clever game. It is not all that complicated. I think it would be fairly easy to get back to the table. And one of the reasons I'm surprised that it's on this list, to a certain extent, I'm the one that put it here, but I'm surprised, is because I remember after playing A War of Whispers, I was like, I enjoyed this so much. I hope I get this back to the table soon. And then I just didn't, and I didn't find myself craving another play of it. And yet, I had a wonderful time with it. I mean, it's a really, really cool game, A War of Whispers is. And it isn't one that I've gravitated towards, that I've asked for again. I didn't ever ask my friend to bring it back to the game. I could have, but I didn't. And that is sometimes a sign to me that I got the experience that I wanted from the game, and it's maybe okay not to play it again. And this was one, a couple of games on this list are games that I, so one of the ways I found games for this list is that I looked through the BGG Top 100. So to see some great games on the list, I knew there were games on the BoardGameGeek Top 100 that I had played simply because I'd heard enough people talk about them that I felt like I should play them. So there were those games. I also looked through my BoardGameGeek profile to look at games that I had rated really, really highly, and yet I had only played them once. So that was kind of a sign to me that I had a great experience with these games. I'm really glad that I played them, and yet they were games that I hadn't played again. So I wanted to kind of process that in this video. Why did I enjoy these games so much and yet not feel like I needed to get them back to the table? And I think for a lot of them, especially these top three in particular, they're games that I genuinely really enjoyed. I could potentially play them again. If someone brought it and that was the only option, I would be very happy to play these games again if they brought them to game night. But I'm also just happy to have had the experience of playing them. I got the experience that I wanted out of playing them. I think that's actually another good sign for these games, that they created a great first game experience. So what if I didn't play them again? So what if they don't become a game that I play dozens of times? It still speaks to how well these games are designed, that I had a good first experience with them. So that's a great reminder to me as a designer to really focus on that first experience. And sure, add replayability, add all the replayability I want, or that the designers want to add to these games to make them feel different every time. But I think it's also okay just to really keep in mind that first experience. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on this topic. And again, I hope this hasn't come across as negative at all. It truly is not my intention to do that. And so I hope you do the same in the comments. Like, if you talk about a game that you have played once, talk about why you're happy that you played it once, rather than focusing too much on why you don't think you'll get it to the table again, unless it isn't really a negative answer, a negative aspect to why you don't plan to play it again. I'd love to hear your thoughts in the comments below, especially if they're constructive and positive. let me know here. And feel free to mention Stonemaier games too. Our games are fully eligible for you to mention for that category. If you played one of our games and you're like, you know, I'm really happy I played it, I don't think I'll play it again, I'd love to know. I'd love to learn from your experiences there as well. Thanks.